Hey everyone, it's your old pal Ariel Helwani on this Wednesday, July 31st, 2019. Welcome to a brand new episode of the MMA Reporters, an international episode of the MMA Reporters. Yes, I am coming at you from beautiful Montreal, Quebec, Canada, my hometown, and I'm very excited about this. We're actually taping this episode from the TSN 690 studios in Montreal. A lot of you probably don't know what that means, but this is the main sports station in Montreal, and they're kind enough to let me come here this week to tape the show because I'm in Montreal because my sister just gave birth to her first baby girl, Liv. And this is a very exciting time for all of us. I mentioned it on Monday, drove in yesterday, just taped Ariel and the Bad Guy from the RDS studios. I'm getting to live out my dream of being a Montreal sports journalist. It's great. I'm excited about this. And I'm very thankful that they let us tape the show here today. So, of course, I didn't want to miss this week's episode because we have a lot to talk about coming off UFC 240 in Edmonton. So I went from Canada back to my home, to Bristol, back home, then to Canada. It's been a lot of travel as of late, but it's good, and we have a lot to talk about. Frankie Edgar loses to Max Holloway. What's next for Max Holloway? What's next for Frankie Edgar? What's next for Chris Cyborg? Probably the biggest story coming out of that card. And, of course, this weekend, we have the UFC in Newark, and it's a special matinee affair. A lot of people have been asking me, why is this a matinee? And the reason for that is, this card was originally supposed to be in Russia, and ESPN had the slot scheduled for the afternoon because of the time difference, and for whatever reason, they decided to do the Russia card later in the year, but they still had the time slot scheduled, and so they couldn't change that once they decided to move the event to America and have it in Newark. They had to keep the time slot. So this is a very rare one. I do believe off the top of my head, the last time they had an afternoon card was around 4 years ago with that infamous Jorge Masvidal Ally Quinta fight in Virginia. It was a Saturday afternoon in April. And so the preliminary card starts at 12 Eastern from New Jersey and the main card at 3 Eastern on ESPN. And of course, the big one is the main event, Colby Covington against Robbie Lawler. Potential title fight on the line for Mr. Covington. Lawler trying to avoid the first three-fight losing streak of his career. There's a lot to like there as far as that main event is concerned. And the co-main event is Clay Guida versus Jim Miller. We're going to talk about that main event in particular later in the program with my old friend Chuck Mindenhall joining us for the first time in the history of this show, now working for The Athletic, the man in the hat. I'm very excited to be reunited with him. And then we'll also be joined by New York Rick in studio later from Bristol to talk about some other news and notes. But first, let's go to Las Vegas, where our old friend Brett Okamoto resides of ESPN. You know him. He joins us first on the program. Brett, how are you?
Hey, what's up, Ariel? We're not going to Vegas either. You've reached me in San Jose, California today.
Oh, okay. What are we doing there? Are you allowed to say?
A certain Dagestani. Needed one over here at AKA. Yeah,
okay. Have you tracked him down yet?
I've not tracked him down yet. I flew out this morning, so I've got myself a coffee. I'm sitting in a rental car, and you were my top priority, of course, before I go on the hunt for Khabib.
Okay. Well, we appreciate that. It would have been fun if we talked to you after the conversation to see how it went, but we could do that.
Yeah.
We could do that next week.
Yeah, we would have had something to talk about. Yeah.
Well, the good news is we have a lot to talk about. And, you know, I actually want to start with what I think is the biggest story right now in MMA. That may change come Saturday when Colby fights. But, you know, on Saturday night when we were wrapping up 240, of course, we talked about Cyborg and, you know, what could happen and whatnot. Now we've had a few days to digest it. She's been very vocal in the media, also on social media, rehashing old clips and whatnot. Basically, I'm wondering, do you feel any different about the prospects of her re-signing with the UFC today as opposed to Saturday right after that fight?
No, nothing has changed for me. And I mean, if anything, like it's just reinforced sort of my, I mean, if I'm just going to give my opinion on it, that
sure.
it just very much seems like these two just need to go in their separate ways. You know, I think that the only thing, and I said this on Saturday when you and I were talking about it, the only thing that is kind of, you know, the only reason to keep this going I think, is the rematch with Amanda Nunes. Because otherwise, these two sides, I think that they just want two different things. You know, and I can understand why each side wants the other thing. I mean, you're already starting off in sort of a poor place because of some things that Dana White has said about, Cyborg, when she first signed with the UFC. I mean, forget anything that's happened over the last year and just go completely way back when Ronda Rousey was still competing, and obviously, you know, she was the priority for the company, and that influenced the way that they looked at Cyborg and the way they talked about Cyborg. And so the relationship just got off on the wrong foot to begin with. But as it's sort of developed and evolved, I think it's turned into this situation, you know, where Chris, she wants to fight regularly. She has an opinion on who she should fight. She wants to see a division being built. And I think the UFC, from their business perspective, is saying, look, we don't think that there's enough 145-pounders for you to fight as frequently as you want. We have tried to kind of build a division in our own way. It may not be the way that you wanted to see it built, but, we've done some things, and we've encouraged some women to go up and challenge you, for some women to move up from 135. I just think the relationship has kind of run its course, and like I said, the only thing that's left for these two sides to do is to do that rematch. But unfortunately, you know, the way contracts work, it's going to be hard to just come to terms with that one fight.
Do you think the rematch is worth the squeeze? Like, do you think this rematch is worth all the trouble that has already happened and is sure to come in the negotiation? Because I was talking to someone on Monday, and they were like, yeah, it's a good fight, but like, it's not a quote unquote money fight necessarily. She did lose in less than a minute. Typically when that happens, like, there was no controversy. Maybe us in the bubble, like, think this is a big deal, but really, it's not really that big of a deal. What do you think?
I think the biggest reason it's a huge fight is for Chris's legacy. Now, do I think that her legacy completely changes whether or not she ever takes this fight again, or whether or not she does take the fight and happens to lose or beat Amanda Nunes in the rematch? I think her legacy is pretty well secured for a lot of different reasons, obviously. But of course, you know, she was winning for a very long time, dominant. And then when you lose in that type of fashion, you know, that leaves unanswered questions, and it does have some impact on your legacy. So I think, is it this huge money fight? I mean, is it the blockbuster summer event of 2020? I mean, I don't look at it that way, but I think it's a very important fight for the history of women's MMA. I think it's a fight that, as you mentioned, people in the bubble would really love to see. I think it's a fight that Chris, probably at the end of her career, would really love to have back. I mean, despite anything that the UFC says, I think that Chris, you know, when I talk to her team and just the perception that I get from her competitively, she wants that. And I think when her career is over, regardless of what she's accomplished, if she looks back and says, I fought Amanda Nunes one night and she knocked me out with one punch and I never got the chance to right that wrong, I think that she is the type of person that could potentially lose a little bit of sleep over it. But that's why I think it's a big deal to me. As you're talking about one of the best female fighters of all time, arguably the best, having a chance to right, you know, that really big wrong in her career where she made a mistake and got knocked out very quickly, and to never kind of revisit that would seem like a shame. But at the end of the day, to your question of was it worth it all? Like, I don't think it's worth re-signing in a place that she doesn't want to be, or that, you know, two sides that don't really line up or see eye to eye in terms of what the long-term future is going to look like. I don't think it's worth it to just get that one fight.
What do you think the chances are of Dana White publicly apologizing to her?
Not good.
Yeah.
I mean, just because I Dana White doesn't offer many apologies to begin with. And then on top of that, I just don't think he feels apologetic. I think that he feels like, you know, some of the comments that he made in the past were about steroid use and about, you know, some things that had happened with Chris Cyborg and drug testing. And then, you know, when you fast forward to what's going on now, you know, he feels like, hey, we are interested in doing the rematch. I don't think he's looking at it as two different things. Like he's looking at it as, well, do you want the rematch or not? Well, the rematch comes along with certain things, you know, and in Dana White's mind, you know, it should be enough. If you want the rematch or not, okay, then re-sign with us and we'll do it. You know, but it's a little more complicated than that.
It certainly is. And I'm surprised that he said, oh, we'll do one fight deal. you know as well as I do, they're not doing a one-fight deal, especially for a title fight. They're not doing that. So I don't understand why he said that. I think that could make things a little sticky. I mean, she's going to use that in the public, in private. You know, they'll probably sit down with Hunter Campbell and try to figure it out, and that will not be on the table because the UFC, no promotion, is going to sign a one-fight deal for a title fight because you don't want to run the risk of having someone beat the champion and then walk away with the title. But I'm surprised that he even said that because that's something that's probably going to be used against them in the negotiation. I do feel, though, that it is somewhat disingenuous to say that she doesn't want the rematch and then not say why she doesn't want the rematch, in your opinion. It's because she didn't want the terms of the deal attached to said rematch. And so they, like, I agree with you. At this point, it feels like the relationship is beyond repair. And I wonder why you would even consider going back to work for, like, you're free. If, like, Nate Diaz can publicly come out and say, you know, I don't like the way I'm treated, I don't like the way they hold me back, this, but you're under contract, so you're kind of screwed there. Like, you can't do anything about it. She's actually free. The shackles are off, so to speak. So she can actually go out there and fight for Scott Coker if she likes him so much, or Ryzen, or pro boxing, or pro wrestling. At this point, like, why are you even putting yourself through this? That's the part I can't really wrap my head around. You clearly are offended. You clearly are hurt. You're bothered by these old comments. You're bothered by these new comments. I still can't quite understand why she even considered. I understand why the UFC will try to make this fight happen because it's the biggest fight possible for Nunes, and like that's the business they're in, to try to make the biggest fight possible. I think there are people in the UFC who want to see it happen. I don't think, though, that I don't think like Dana like cares one way or the other. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes, you know as well as I do, he will personally get invested in trying to make a fight happen. In this particular case, even after listening to his comments to you after the fight on Saturday, he's like, that Chris Cyborg couldn't even beat Amanda Nunes or hang with her. It just doesn't feel like he's very much invested in trying to build this fight or promote this fight or spend any time worrying about making this fight. What do you think about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, to address sort of what you said about you don't understand why Chris would even entertain the idea, I mean, I can come up with two quick reasons. I mean, immediately to me, is that the UFC still is, you know, in my opinion, the premier, and I think in everybody's opinion, the premier organization to fight for. So, I mean, there's always that element of it. The company is more than just Dana White, you know, and even if Chris Cyborg's relationship with Dana White is not good, it's you could still, I mean, we've seen it in the past. I mean, fighters who have a poor relationship with Dana White still fight there and still accomplish great things, you know. And then I think also it's the rematch. It's the rematch with Amanda Nunes. And like I said, I still believe that Chris Cyborg, I mean, you don't become who Chris Cyborg is and how dominant she has been, and you don't show up and be in shape and on point against women who you're, you know, a 20-to-1 favorite against, unless you are just a personally, you know, driven person. And to be driven like that, I would think that you would want to fight someone that beat you, you know. And I think competitively, that is something that she wants, but there's timing to it, and there's negotiations to it, and there's contracts to it. As far as if the UFC wants to fight or not, I think you're correct that they could take it or leave it. I don't think that they're just dismissive of it and saying, you know, we don't want to put this fight together at all. But, you know, it just goes back to everything that we've been talking about during this whole conversation of, I think that they're kind of at the end of their rope in terms of dealing with Chris, as Chris is with them. And the only thing that is keeping us from just severing that rope completely is that rematch.
And by the way, I want to be clear, when I say Dana White, I don't mean the entire UFC. Like, I mean him personally. For whatever reason, they just haven't gotten off on the right foot. And I think this dates back to the Ronda Rousey stuff way back when, 6 or so years ago. And so for him, I don't think he's losing sleep over this necessarily. I don't expect him to apologize for things said 5 or so years ago as well. And so I'm really curious to see how it plays out. One thing I would love to see happen, I don't think it's going to happen, but if she's already publicly said, I am going to test the waters, like, even if I have a 3-month negotiation period, I'm still going to test the waters. Wouldn't it be cool to, and maybe the UFC wants to use that up and they have every right to contractually, but like, why don't we just expedite this thing? Like, and they've done it with other people. Say, all right, go get the offers, see what's out there, and then we'll see if we can match it, because they'll always have the right to match, as opposed to just sitting 3 months, nothing happens, then test the waters, then you go through the process. Because I'm assuming they'd probably want this to happen sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and perhaps they will do that, because I think that there's a reason to do that, in that, okay, well, if Amanda Nunes is not fighting Chris Cyborg next, well, then who is she fighting? You know, is she going to fight Jermaine Duronomy. I would imagine that that's the case, right? So let's get moving on that. I mean, there's no need to sit it out just for the sake of sitting it out, in my opinion. You know, so perhaps they will do that because this does affect more than just Chris. I think it affects, you know, the woman who's sort of waiting to find out if she's going to have a rematch against her, and that's Amanda.
Okay, let me ask you about, obviously, the other big story coming out of this past Saturday. Max Holloway wins. Now, of course, they're going to try and make that fight against Alex Volkanovski happen on October 5th in the United States, October 6th in Australia at Marvel Stadium in Melbourne. He was at Contender Series in Vegas. You were there as well. Any update? I mean, it seems like there's a reason why he's there, right? They don't have a lot of time. That's in a little over 2 months. Any updates on how the talks went, or if they have even happened?
Yeah, I wish I could give an update for you, a firm one, but I don't have one. I do know that this was planned from the beginning. I mean, this is not something where, you know, Max won on Saturday and said, okay, we need to go to Vegas and sit down with the UFC. I mean, he had business to attend to in Vegas. That's actually where his manager lives now, is in Vegas. So they had several, you know, things to address as a team after that fight in Edmonton. To me, it's still where it was on Saturday. It's as a team, you know, and you know this as well as I do, that Max respects the people around him. He appreciates their honesty and their point of view, and they're not against going to Melbourne and fighting Alex Volkanovski if it is, you know, in his best interest when it comes to, is that just too many fights in a short amount of time? I mean, that'd be four title fights in a span of 10 months. I mean, that is a lot. That is a lot. And Max is always willing to sign on the dotted line. He's always willing to take the next challenge. I mean, that's what people love about him. But when you start to look at, is it smart to take a fourth title fight in 10 months, you know, across the entire world, is that something that we want to do or not? And I think those are the conversations they're still having this week.
Yeah, I reached out to Max's manager, Chris, and he's usually very quick to respond. I asked him how things are going in Vegas, and I didn't get a response yet. I don't know if that means anything one way or the other, but I just thought it was interesting. I saw him sitting there next to Max at the Contender Series show, but I didn't get a response, and I don't know what to make of that.
Yeah, that's the worst response. There's no response.
I know. Right? But maybe that means something's happening and they don't want to talk about it, you know? Like,
usually that is what it means.
Right.
Yeah.
Obviously there's, I mean, he has a lot of leverage here. Do you think, I asked Chael this question earlier, do you think that they can still sell it out without that fight? Do they need Volkanovski in a co-main event, a second title fight, an Australian fighting for the belt to sell 60,000? Because the last time they went there, you had Ronda Rousey, who was an international superstar. She sold it almost on her own. Now you have Adesanya Whitaker, which is gigantic there, but there's no Ronda Rousey on the card. Do you feel like that's enough?
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably not the right person to ask. You know, we got to get our friends from Submission Radio on to see, you know, what the buzz is for Whitaker and Adesanya over there. I mean, I would think that fight, I mean, I'll tell you that, you know, for me, that's arguably the best fight of the year, the most marquee fight of the year. It's the one that I would want to be at the most that has been announced so far in an entire 2019. But we are talking about a lot of people over there. You know, 50,000 seats, it's not easy to sell that out. And this will be the second time that they go there this year. So, and we've seen that, you know, be the case with the UFC in the past, is if they go to a market too frequently, you know, then they can run out of a little bit of the buzz that they've had in the past. But, I mean, my gut reaction is to say I think that they could sell it out without it. But, again, I'd want to talk to some people who are on the ground in Australia to see how big and how much of the buzz is around Adesanya and Whitaker.
Yeah, I think they can, but I think it might expedite things a little bit if they did have Volkanovski fighting for the belt. One last thing, I was very impressed with Jillian Robertson this past Saturday, and they're turning around very quickly against Macy Barber. What a great fight that is. Big step up, I think, for Macy Barber. That's going down October 18th. You reported that yesterday for the Boston card. Are you surprised that Robertson is coming back this soon against someone like Barber?
No, I mean, Robertson is, I mean, she's that age, you know, that if she comes out with, she was pretty dominant in Edmonton, and you got a good thing going, you got good momentum. She asked for a fight, and, you know, Macy Barber was sort of had a time frame that she wanted to come back on, and they were trying to find her opponent, and hey, this fight does make a lot of sense. I mean, we don't always see the prospect versus prospect fight, a 21-year-old versus a 24-year-old, both flyweights with a lot of promise. In a division that sort of needs people to stand out, I think, you know, it's still building.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily the matchup that I would have guessed, but I like it. I think it's a very, very competitive fight, and I think we're going to learn a lot about both of them.
Yep, I like that fight a lot, and business certainly picking up at 125. Valentina Shevchenko returning to action next weekend in Uruguay against Liz Carmouche in a rematch. She'll be defending her 125-pound title in that fight. So I love that fight. A bit of a surprise, quick turnaround for Robertson, but an interesting one, October 18th in Boston. All right, we'll let you go, Brett. Good luck getting Khabib, and let us know how it goes next week.
I will keep you updated. Thanks, Ariel.
All right, there he is, Brett Okamoto in San Jose, tracking down the Dagestani cowboy, the gangster, Khabib Nurmagomedov, who, of course, is preparing for his title fight in September. All right, now let's move along. I'm very excited about this. I haven't talked to this guy in like a year. The man in the hat, my old friend. He's such a big deal now. I asked him to come on the show all the time, and I can't even get a text back. Big deal over at The Athletic, going all over the place, rubbing elbows with the big wigs. But he has carved out. He said, I can't go longer than 20 minutes. I'm a very busy guy. So let's not waste any more time and say hello to my old pal, Chuck Mendenhall. Chuck, are you there? Is it you?
Ariel, it's been a long time, man. I finally had to relent after the 25th text. So
yes.
I'm happy that I could jump on with you, man.
There he is, my old friend.
I wish. I've been waiting for this.
Oh, well, it's good to hear your voice.
And here we are, man. Finally get to do it. So glad to be reunited with you.
I miss seeing you. I hope you're wearing a hat right now. Are you?
I actually have a ball cap on. Yeah, I'm getting ready to bounce. The reason I gave you 20 minutes, I have a flight coming up. So I got my flight gear on. I wear my ball cap.
I appreciate that. and I see you taking that name everywhere. You've got the podcast now with Sean Alshadi. Is it the man in the myth or is it just man in the myth?
Well, if you're wrapping it in quotes, it's just man in myth, right? But like everybody refers to it as the man in the myth.
Okay, got you. And that's a podcast that's available weekly, sometimes twice a week on The Athletic. You guys are doing great work over there. I'm a subscriber, and congratulations to everyone on the 500,000 subscribers. It's a big week for you guys. So very cool, and I'm very happy for you guys that you're doing your thing over there. And I'm happy that you're on the show. And so let's not waste any time here. Let's talk about Colby Covington and Robbie Lawler, because I feel like you are the perfect guy to talk about this fight. In fact, you spent some time in New York yesterday with Colby Covington. Is that true?
I did, man. I got a chance to have lunch with him. It was cool, too, because, you know, a lot of times they do these luncheon gatherings with a group of media, but the UFC set aside just, a time for me and him to have lunch together. So it was cool I've never actually sat down with him. I've always talked to him in passing at the big events where everybody's waiting in line and things like that. So it was kind of cool to see how he operates, you know, who he is a little bit more up close and personal for like half an hour.
Okay, so how does he operate in person?
You know, the truth is, man, he's very kind of soft-spoken. And I know you've talked to him plenty, but he's struck me. And it's not the most perfect gauge to be sitting across from somebody having a meal and to get their full personality. That's kind of an awkward setup. He had a couple of his guys from the gym with him, too, so they were kind of sitting there on periphery. But ultimately, man, I mean, once he gets rolling, once you're talking to him and you start asking him about why he is who he is and things like that, his eyes kind of come to life a little bit and he starts telling you the stuff you think he'll tell you. And I wasn't sure, man. I've talked to you about this before. Like, he strikes me almost as like an Andy Kaufman type figure in the fight game, because I never know exactly where the fiction side, the shtick, where that meets the sincerity and the genuine guy. I'm never sure where he falls in that, and that's that pro wrestling kind of, I don't know, what's the word? Is it kayfabe? Is that the word that you like to use?
Kayfabe, yeah.
Okay. So I'm never sure if, I'm never sure where that starts and ends. So I thought that just by asking him direct questions about that, I'd kind of get to it. But he struck me as actually fairly sincere, at least in his belief about who he's about. And he was talking, you know, the whole Donald Trump connection. He had his hat on, and he was talking about some of the run-ins he's had in New York City just since he landed, where people are telling him he's disgusting and, know, that sort of thing. Yeah, things like that. But he's talking about it with almost a broad grin on his face. So I felt like I saw who he is, and it's just he's a guy who likes to ruffle feathers, man. But I do feel like there's a sincere guy just right at the same level. He's being sincere who he is, I believe.
So the last time we saw him fight was in June of 2018 against RDA. And I remember right after that fight, so like he was talking that at the time, you know, there was a story that came out that the Eagles didn't want to go to the White House and the Warriors weren't going to the White House, all that stuff. And he was playing it up that he was going to take the belt to the White House and was really tapping into everything that's going on in Washington and across America with, you know, Donald Trump being president and whatnot. And here I'm wondering, what is the reaction going to be like? What is it? 13 or so months later, almost 14 months later. Like, do you feel when he left Chicago and he was drinking a water bottle? I don't know if you remember this, and it said RDA's tears on the water bottle. And then like a month later, he's actually in the Oval Office with Donald Trump. I was like, this guy has nuclear heat. Like, it's unbelievable what he's done. But now I wonder, like, has too much time passed? Like, do you feel like there's still enough buzz around him? Does he have that momentum or has it been lost?
You know, it's funny. I was thinking about this a little bit too as I was talking to him, because if you talk to him and his team, those the guys around him, they talk about the it factor, and we've kind of dissected what this word means many times, but I'm not sure he completely has that it factor. I'm not sure he ever did. He has a certain version of it that he compels you, because, you know, anytime somebody can call their shot and end up actually in the, you know, Oval Office with Donald Trump or at the White House, like you see that type of thing and you think, like, this guy has more to him than maybe we gave him credit earlier on. He has something like that, but I don't know how much it translates. And I think that it, in the end, you know how politics, you don't bring them to the dinner table, you don't really talk politics in general, mixed company, you know that it can turn sour quickly. He's willingly polarizing, and I think that somewhere, you know, just by being political like that, and I think somewhere along the way he becomes almost like a topic you don't want to bring up in the same level as that. So it's been weird. I feel like even just mentioning his name, I put out a tweet yesterday, like, there's so much where people are like, oh, just ignore that guy, why would anybody give that guy the time of day? And that's a very strange way to enter a fight week, where people are just basically trying to de-significant, like, make you insignificant, to ignore you. And I feel like that's kind of the weird space he's in as he goes toward this fight. Through that whole time off, you know, and just everything that's happened since he was with the president, I just feel like he's put himself into a weird position where some people kind of like the shtick, some people like him as a fighter, but a lot of people just don't want to talk about him. They act like you're bringing up, you know, some sore subject that they've long wanted to put behind them. Yeah. And that's maybe what he's up against heading into this fight on Saturday.
I guess the big question is, like, people clearly don't like him. You can make a strong case that he's the most hated fighter on the roster. He brings up these emotions. People get really uncomfortable talking about him. But is it like good heat or bad heat? Is it the kind of heat that people want to watch him get his butt whooped? Or is it the kind of heat where they're like, oh, he's main eventing this show on Saturday afternoon, I'm skipping it? What's your opinion?
That's a good question. I think talking to him, he believes that. I remember Josh Koscheck saying sometime, like, it doesn't matter if they love me or hate me, I just want them to care. I feel like he's of that school, but he's a much more effective, hand at it. Like, he knows what he's doing. I think that he believes people want to see him get beat up. And I think that he believes that that's why he's maybe on this ESPN card, and finding a guy like Robbie Lawler, who's more of a fan favorite. I asked him, like, what does he expect the building to be like? He thought he was going to be booed. I said, do you, like, kind of come up with stuff you might want to, you know, knowing that that might be the case, do you come up with your walkout music? Are you thinking about that? Are you thinking about what you're going to say on the mic? He gets this, you know, shifting in his seat and, you know, rubbing his palms, just wait and see type stuff. I mean, I feel like he really believes that he has achieved this super villain place. Like, people are winning it, and he's willing to embrace it. But I personally think that it's not quite to that level. I could see people skipping this. I could see that, because the card itself is not as great. There isn't a lot of value down the card. But I've never agreed that maybe he's at the level that he believes he's at. I guess I want to be proven wrong on that, though, because I feel like he is a different kind of character in the game, and I'd be intrigued to see it. But I think that for the most part, if people are tuning in, I think they probably want to see him get knocked out, but there might be plenty of people who they don't even want to muster the, you know, the care to want to watch him. So I think that that's where he's at, man. Honestly, I think that that's what he's kind of trying to overcome right now.
I think the layoff hurts him, and so he can remind a lot of people, who he is, what he's all about, and why they hated him to begin with a big performance, and perhaps even more so a big performance on the mic afterwards. And you bring up a great analogy with Josh Koscheck, because for the longest time, Josh Koscheck, and as someone like Michael Bisping as well, fell in this trap. They couldn't understand why initially they were being booed, why they were so disliked, and they would try to fight it. Colby has almost realized a little later on in his UFC career, like, okay, people aren't liking me for just being Colby Covington, so let me just piss everyone off, and then they'll start caring about me. And I have heard, believe it or not, that he has reached out. I don't know if this will resonate with you, Chuck, but stick with me here, because it's kind of brilliant, if you ask me. He has reached out through a friend to Kurt Angle, the former WWE champion, whose theme song was very popular while he was an active wrestler, and it was popular because fans love to chant "You suck" in the middle of the theme song. So the song would go something like, "Dun dun 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 dun, dun you suck, you suck." Like, the fans just couldn't help themselves, and he has asked Kurt if he can use that song because he wants people to chant "You suck" as he makes his way to the cage. So that's a guy who clearly is very comfortable being booed.
Yeah, I think he somewhere made his peace with that. And I mean, to me, that's fascinating, because it's almost counterintuitive as a human being, and especially a public figure, to actively want people's hate, you know. And I feel like he has, for whatever reason, man, that's how he's built. He's built to withstand this. And I don't know if it's something he recognized within himself. But that certainly strikes me, man. I mean, like I mentioned, when he was kind of relaying some stories just from walking around New York, where people, because he was doing the media rounds yesterday. He was kind of going around to Sports Illustrated and CBS and all these different places, Sirius Radio. And I guess at each place, even within where he was at, people were telling him, you know, like, "You're disgusting," or one person, like, "You are literally an elephant in this room. You're the elephant in this room," and giving him a hard time. But you could tell that he was just, he loves that, you know, and that's just a different mindset. I think, you know, the guys who've been like antagonists back in the day, and guys like Chael, who did it masterfully, knew, though, that they had something kind of redeeming about them that was going to bring another, you know, like, if they're equal amount, they're either you're going to love them or hate them. I feel like he's okay if he is universally hated. That's a very unique mindset to bring to the octagon. Like, I think whatever he has up his sleeve, maybe you know more than me, but like, whatever he has up his sleeve for his post-fight speech, it was making him giddy to imagine what the, you know, the building kind of coming undone. We know what he did in Brazil when he's, you know, the filthy animal thing. So he just really, really likes this role as a villain, man. It must fit his personality, but it's something that's very foreign for somebody like me, or most people, I guess, to understand.
I was very surprised when he accepted this fight, because it seemed like the lane was open for him to finally get that title fight.
Yeah.
He did a great job of building a feud with Woodley, and that didn't come to fruition, at least for now. And then he did a great job building a feud with Usman. They have this confrontation at the Palms. He's trying to get crab legs, and they're there, and it's like a whole mess of a situation the day after Usman wins the belt, and that doesn't come to fruition, at least for now. Like, if he loses this fight, all that goes away. So there's a lot of pressure on his shoulders, but I foresee a scenario, if he wins this fight, they do him versus Usman at Madison Square Garden. And I feel like that stage against Usman, and the way that fight will go, the build up to that fight, then it will be a big deal. Like, this one kind of feels like it's flying under the radar a bit, but this one is to get to that one, and I feel like that one will be massive.
I agree with you 100%. I mentioned this at another time too. The only scenario I could see where maybe that won't be the case is if he just puts on a snooze fest of a fight. Only because, if you remember, the Usman, when he's fighting Woodley, I thought it was masterful in how he controlled that fight and really just dictated his will through five rounds. But people were, you know, people in the building, and we know Vegas can be tough judges, but they were booing the action a little bit. And I think if you have Colby Covington in a situation where he's booed for the bulk of a fight, even though he's dominating the fight, it might set up like a, it might take something away from the imagination on that fight. It might actually feel like dread to imagine seeing two guys like that going against each other. I hope that's not the case, though, because I mean, we've wanted to see kind of this division open up in ways and guys like Covington to break through, and I think that this is his big moment. So I'm with you. I could see a scenario, though, where maybe it's not as big as it should be, but I hope it all goes well in the end and he's able to, if he does win this fight, that he has enough of an emphatic showing where there's true anticipation for something like that at Madison Square Garden. And let's remember that he's basically saying that Donald Trump would be there if he's able to make that fight, yes, at Madison Square Garden. So imagine the kind of crazy, things that are going to go into something like that. You know me, man. I like craziness in the fight game, so it's hard for me not to enjoy a scenario like that.
For now, he'll have to settle with Donald Trump Jr. and maybe even Eric,
yeah,
Trump, who apparently are going to be there in attendance on Saturday afternoon. Do you foresee a scenario where this is a stinker? It's not very exciting. It's boring. He's booed out, but it's like the bad booing out of the building, and they just go with Masvidal?
It's hard for me. I mean, I can see that scenario. I guess that's in some ways, we used to see this back in the Fox days where Dana White would say, hey, this is for a title fight, and the guy would go in and win or whatever, and then he didn't get the title fight. I feel like that's kind of the setup for this one. But I mean, with Masvidal hanging out there like that, I could see that scenario. I just think that Robbie Lawler won't let it happen. Just being who he is and coming off of that last fight, plus being in the twilight of his career, having extra motivation, I just don't think he's going to let it be a boring fight in the end. Even if it was left to Colby to try to drag it into something like that, I think that that Lawler's going to force something that's going to make it exciting. At least that's my hope.
Okay, before I let you go, because I know you have to get a plane, you have to catch a plane, you spent time, one of my favorite stories of all time that you did, and there's a lot to choose from. There's the Strange Brew one, Jason Thacker, but one of my favorites is the one on Monty Cox and the old days, Miletich and all that. Can you tell us a classic old school Robbie Lawler story that you learned? And I'm putting you on the spot. I didn't ask you this beforehand.
Yeah.
And so I'm sorry if I'm putting you on the spot here. I'm delaying a little bit in throwing it back to you so that you can gather your thoughts. But do you have a classic Iowa old school Robbie Lawler story to leave us with as we prepare for this fight?
Oh man, I was trying to think. Like he did talk. It's like that was years ago that I wrote this one. But I remember Monty Cox was telling me something about the local shows, and I believe, and I hope I'm not slaughtering this, but I believe he was one of the guys. They used to basically, the guys within that camp would say, like, hey, you're fighting so-and-so, you're fighting so-and-so. They'd load into a car, and they would all head off to wherever the event was going to be. And there were situations where they'd say, all right, so Robbie, listen, you can't throw a punch in the first round. You know what I mean? They would put a limitation on him and make him do something else to get it done. And I believe, and I hope I'm not slaughtering, that he was the one guy that they'd mentioned who would go in there and do that. You know, he would go in there and take his challenge, and then he would still win the fight. And, that just tells you. I mean, back then, too, remember, he was just a kid. So he's been through it, man. There were a lot of actual good stories about him being, just at the gym, establishing, him being there beyond the hours and stuff like that. But that's the one I remember the most, was just them finding ways to challenge him that way.
The piece is called The Eagles of Bettendorf.
That's right,
it's
yeah.
phenomenal. Way back in the day, wow, I can't believe it's been over 5 years. March 13th, 2014, it was published on MMA Fighting. One of the all-time great pieces, courtesy of our good pal Chuck Mendenhall. And you've had a lot, and you're killing it, my man. You're doing great work over at The Athletic. I miss you. I miss hearing your voice. Like, just sitting here, closing my eyes, I feel like it's the old MMA beat days. So I'm very nostalgic about all of this, and
well,
I want to do it more.
I'm glad you've got this thing rolling, because I feel like now this is the new MMA beat, and you've been killing it likewise, man. I've been paying attention to everything you're doing, and it's almost like I knew it was going to happen for you, and I'm just being around you for so long, and it's been a lot of fun to watch from afar, but I'm glad to finally catch up with you again, man.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it, and go Nuggets.
Yeah, go Nuggets.
That's right. All right, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for doing this. Check him out, The Athletic, Chuck Mendenhall, one of the greatest to ever do it, joining us here on the show. I really appreciate it. There he is, off on his journey, Chuck Mendenhall. Wow, the man in the hat. I'm getting all warm and fuzzy inside. I know a lot of you long-time MMA beat fans will have enjoyed that, because that was a lot of fun. It brought back some old memories. Speaking of which, let's say hello now to New York Rick, who I do believe is joining us in our Bristol studio, I should say. Bristol. Are you there, New York Rick, in Bristol?
I am here, my friend.
Wow, look at that. Sounds so good.
Crystal clear.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like, if I didn't tell anyone, they'd think that you were sitting right next to me.
Who knows? Maybe I am.
Maybe you are. How about that? Hearing Chuck Mendenhall on the show?
Yeah, I just caught the end of it, but it's good to hear a familiar voice. Now, I have to admit, missing the hat.
You know, yes.
That's part of the deal there. That's part of the package.
Right.
But I can visualize it after many years in the saddle with Chuck.
We spoke about that. We spoke about the old times, the good feelings, the fact that I pretty much created the Man in the Hat moniker, and now he's just running with it and doing podcasts with that term.
Yeah, let me ask you about that, actually.
Yeah. No, I'm cool. I'm cool with it. Go. Do it.
I feel
water
like
it, plant it, let it grow.
The man, the myth is how you do it. The man and the myth? I don't know.
Wow, so you're just calling into question the whole podcast, like
the name, the
brand.
The name.
Wow, okay. Well, let's take this up with
now,
Sean
I've
and Chuck.
I've floated this to Sean. But
you have? Okay, we'll, you've actually taken it up with him.
Oh, I have.
Okay.
But we'll see the feedback after this.
All right. Well, now I'm curious about your feedback.
Sure.
Because there's only one reason why I had you on this week's show.
Oh, boy.
There's only one reason. And look, we've done this before. In fact, I think we've done it like 7 times. But at this point, you have to come out and tell me what you think about this BJ Penn situation. Because for those that don't know, New York Rick has always been the biggest BJ Penn mark. He has been an unabashed BJ Penn supporter. He traveled to UFC 101 when he fought Kenny Florian. He traveled to UFC 123 when he fought Matt Hughes. Those are the only two times you saw him in person?
No, in Brazil, most recently.
Well, like as a fan.
Oh, yes. The times I purchased tickets, yes, those were the two.
You love this. Your favorite fighter, correct?
Favorite fighter. And although, I have to couch that because it's becoming very difficult, not because of the losses, not because of the legacy, but other things that are staining his name outside of the cage. If he was just on a losing streak, I could live with that. I could deal with that because the things that he did inside the cage when he did them in his prime, I don't think we've seen a fighter quite like him since. I really believe that he was uniquely talented and uniquely special at that time. And I could deal with that. But the things that are happening outside the cage, it becomes very hard to separate the fight career from the man. And I'm not, you know, I can't blindly just continue to stand idly by and say that everything is fine, everything's the same, because it's not. It's really
but
not.
I wonder, like, I think it is perfectly fine to wonder if what is happening to him outside of the cage, his behavior outside of the cage, is related to what's going on in the cage. I mean, if you look at the stats, you look at how much he's been hit, you look at how much time he's spent in the cage, you look at the losses, you look at the performances, you look at the fact that he doesn't look and act and fight the way he once did, this is very uncomfortable. Am I wrong for saying that?
I want to say yes, and I want to say that, but I almost feel like there's a comfort there. I almost feel like it's excusing it. I almost feel like by saying yes, because of the hard go he's had in the cage and because of the continued career, these are the things that will happen, but that's not the reality. The reality is he's on his own volition, acting in a manner that's not appropriate of anybody, let alone somebody, who's in the public eye and of his stature and has people looking up to him. So I want to say yes, but I almost feel like that's giving him an out. That's almost giving him a reason, a justification for these actions. And the reality is there isn't one.
No.
He is acting in a way that is unjustified.
Okay. That's fair. That's 100% fair. What was your reaction considering all of this, the out of the cage stuff,
yeah,
the in the cage performances? What was your reaction when you found out they're giving him another fight against Nick Lentz?
It's just sad. And, you know, Dana, came out and said that the reason why he did it was because, you know, BJ's harassing him and you know, he continued to harass him until he would break down and give him this fight, but then said this would be the last one. And the reality is, I don't think Dana's in control of that. You know, we've heard that before, and Dana has tried to do that, to his credit, with guys like Chuck Liddell in the past. But a fighter who is in this condition, who wants to continue to fight, will always find a way to fight. So even though it won't be potentially with the UFC if this is a loss for BJ Penn, and I also think if it's a win, it may not be the last one. I think, you know, Dana's win, lose, or draw thing may not be true. If BJ Penn comes out there and absolutely smokes Nick Lentz, you think that they're going to go, oh, well, that was a great way to ride off into the sunset. I don't think either the UFC as a promotion or BJ Penn will vibe with that. So, let's assume that it's a loss. If it is, I don't think that this will be the end. So it's disheartening. It's saddening. But I don't think that the people around him haven't told him this. I don't think that he's in a situation where the people around him have just been sitting and watching this decline happen. I do think there are people that love him that are telling him this, and I think even Dana White and the UFC do feel a certain way about this. But unfortunately, it really is, and we've said this before, it's up to the fighters. It's not up to the people around them. They can voice their opinion, and the media can voice their opinion, and the fans can voice their opinion. But it is ultimately, at the end of the day, up to the fighters. And if somebody's willing to give them a fight and they want to fight, they will take that contract. So it's disheartening. It's sad. And I do feel like he is tarnishing his reputation and his legacy. But I think that the outside the cage stuff is more concerning for me.
In the midst of this losing streak, he hasn't had a lot of grudge matches. You know, like Clay Guida, I'm assuming, respected him. And
Were best buds in Rio.
Sure, exactly. So are you concerned even more so by the fact that there is clearly an issue between him and Nick Lentz? Like, Nick Lentz is going to try to hurt him real bad. And I'm not suggesting that Clay Guida didn't try to hurt him, but there is bad blood here. You know what I mean? And that just makes it even worse in some respects. Like, now you're putting him in the cage against a guy who really wants to hurt him, who really does not like him, there are bad feelings. You see the things that Nick is saying about him on Monday on my show. There's nothing about this. And on top of that, at the end of the day, what is the point of the UFC? The UFC is there to put on fights that people want to see, to get people to either buy tickets to watch those fights in person, buy pay-per-views, buy ESPN Plus, whatever the case may be. But at the end of the day, it's always to make some sort of transaction to consume this, right? At the end of the day, they're making money. They're a business. No one wants to see this fight. Who's the one person out there that says, I want to see BJ Penn fight? So then what are you doing? Are you doing it because he terrorized you? Are you doing it because you are indebted to him? Well, if that is the case, then give him a job. Then pay him. How much is he making for this fight? $40,000? Pay him $40,000. Put him on the payroll. Make him travel around. Be an ambassador. Shake hands. Sign autographs. Like, I don't understand. The justification for this can't just be, he's terrorizing me and he promised me this is it. Because guess what? As you just said, it's not it. If he wins, he's sticking around. And by the way, if he loses, he'll still go somewhere else and fight. Bare knuckle. Like, this is not it. It is not it. 100%, it is not it.
So to address your first question regarding the bad blood between him and Nick Lentz, I'll say two things about that. One, I think there's going to be bad blood for BJ Penn, much more so than there is for Nick Lentz. I think Nick Lentz knows what he's doing, is playing into a fight that is over a name that will mean something in his career, at a time where he needs a name that will mean something in his career. I certainly think there is an element of bad blood, the way on your show on Monday he talked about BJ Penn harassing himself and his wife on Instagram. I definitely think that there is a bad blood element to it, but I also think Nick is a very smart promoter and knows what he's doing here. But there will be bad blood from both sides. Secondarily, I don't feel any more comfortable with a fight that has bad blood than I did with the Clay Guida fight, which didn't have bad blood. I think both of them are not appropriate for the stage in BJ Penn's career right now. I don't think he needs to be facing this level of opponent, UFC caliber opponents, if he's going to continue fighting. So I'm no less or more comfortable, to be honest, you know, due to the bad blood, because I think it's been over for a while. I don't think that this will be any more dangerous. It's over. It's been over. Then as far as, you know, will people tune in? I think, unfortunately, that people will still watch this with their hands over their eyes and peeking through, you know, their fingers. I don't think that we have reached a point where people have said, I won't watch BJ Penn. And I think that, you know, we've been at this point with other fighters before. Fedor has gone on a losing streak. Chuck Liddell has famously gone on a very bad losing streak, getting knocked out. And BJ Penn hasn't suffered those kinds of losses. I think we all collectively are groaning and all collectively are saying this needs to be the end. But at the same time, I do think people will watch it. I don't think that everybody will take the stance that perhaps should be taken and say, I refuse to support this. I refuse to watch this because I think it's unrealistic. I think people will watch.
The UFC doesn't have to help guys in retirement or girls. They don't have to do that. They don't have to do what they did with Chuck or Matt Hughes, Big Nog. And it's worth noting they were doing this a lot more in the previous regime as opposed to the one now that's owned by Endeavor for the most part. They don't have to do that. There's no players association, fighters association in place that forced them to have some sort of retirement plan. But do you feel like there is some kind of obligation towards these founding fathers of the UFC, these pillars of the UFC? Like, you can't do it for every single fighter, but for someone like BJ Penn, who was very important in the growth of the UFC, should they be looking out for him?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, to take it even a step further, I do believe that everybody should be looked after. You said it should be for the founding fathers and, you know, it can't be for everybody. I think that is a realistic answer and that is the truth of the situation. But if we're thinking of an ideal world of what should actually be achieved is some kind of collective support for these fighters. They are putting their health at risk every single time they step into that cage. As we saw recently in the boxing ring, combat sports is very, very dangerous and many times, or not many times, but sometimes fatal. It is important that these people are looked after their career is over so that there isn't necessarily this push to continue to fight. I think BJ Penn's case is a little bit unique in the sense that I don't think it's monetary. Whereas there are a lot of fighters where I do think they're coming back for that last
paycheck.
Really?
You don't believe that?
I don't believe that BJ Penn needs the money more than he needs the feeling that he is still a fighter.
It's got to play some part in it.
Sure. And I don't pretend to know BJ Penn's finances. But from the outside looking in, to me, this feels like a man who's, and I've said this, we've had this conversation 7 times and I feel like I've said it 7 times. His identity is so wrapped up in this that I don't believe he exists in his own mind outside of being a fighter. I think that is where he is and what he will always be and where, how he, you know, receives his validation. And he will continue to chase that. And I don't think giving him a cushy job, or putting him in the Hall of Fame or any of those things will change that scenario. So unfortunately, I think this is what the status will continue to be. But I think, you know, to get to the larger point that you asked, do I think there's an obligation? I don't think there's an obligation by the UFC. Like, you know, it is a little bit different. There is no, fighters union. There is no collective bargaining agreement. There's nobody fighting for these rights and these things for fighters at the moment, unfortunately. But I think down the line, that is something that will be fought for eventually. I don't know when, I don't know how, but eventually will be fought for, and collectively the fighters should and will be taken care of.
I agree with what you said about his identity. It's one of the most depressing stories that I've come across covering the sport and being a fan of the sport. And you know, he kind of reminds me of a child actor in the sense that this was who he was so early on. He was so good at it. And now he just doesn't know how to live without it. In fact, I don't know if you saw this, but he even commented on my Instagram yesterday when I posted the video of me talking about him, on Monday on the show. And this is what he said. Let me pull it up right over here. He said, take that SH expletive to a therapist and get better soon. That was his response. So I guess that means he's not really in agreement with what I'm saying.
Certainly not. I said this earlier, I think there are people who are telling him this. I think there are people who are talking to him. He's seeing he saw your post. He saw what you said. And just cannot accept that reality, which is, you know, where we stand today.
You don't believe this is his last fight, right? Unless something tragic happens.
Which, I don't.
By the way, I fear something tragic will happen.
I'm not that fearful of that outcome. Although certainly I accept that is a reality and that is a reality of cage fighting. And we got a stark reminder of combat sports, being dangerous last week. But I do think he will continue to fight, whether it's with the UFC or not. I think Dana White will keep his word, and this will be the last fight should BJ Penn lose. But I don't know if BJ Penn is in agreement there. I could see him fighting for another organization.
Let's end on a positive note.
That'd be good.
The floor is yours. Please gloat about Felicia Spencer.
No, there's nothing to gloat about from that sense, other than to say that this is what you will see when the true 145 pounders are found. You know, I've long said, and my argument for Felicia Spencer getting this shot against Cyborg is that Felicia Spencer is a legitimate 145 pounder. Megan Anderson is a legitimate 145 pounder. But outside of those two, there isn't much of a division there. It's a lot of 135 pounders going up. It's Jermaine Durandamy. It's Holly Holm. It's fighters like that who are actually 135 or so. There is 145 pound talent out there. I don't know if there's enough to fill an entire division the way the other divisions are. Now, flyweight has what, 15 total people at this point. I think you could get 10 legitimate female featherweights. But Felicia Spencer showed what the level of opposition for Cyborg looks like when you have a true featherweight, and gave a great performance. And at the same time, I thought Cyborg looked really, really sharp in that performance as well.
That's it. This was your chance. Look, she didn't win. It would have been probably better if she won. I'll be honest.
Well, that, but, I might have walked in with a little bit of strut, strut in my step if that had happened. But I think, suffice it to say, I think she is a future champion at featherweight. I think, she fighting Cyborg when she's 7 fights into her career, showed that she can hang at this level, and she is a true 145er, as I said. So if there are is a 145 pound division out there, as she continues through her career, I think she's proven that she has the tools to be an eventual champion there.
Yeah. I'm a big fan. I was inspired by her performance. Like I was so blown away by just how tough she was. And I know it's kind of funny when she loses 30-27, although I think the fight was actually closer than, 30-27. I think Cyborg won the fight fair and square, and maybe you can make a case for the first round going to Spencer, but like to take those punches from Cyborg to keep coming to cut her open with the elbows. I mean, just for someone who only had 7 fights going into that fight, incredible.
It's a fighting cliche, but she fought to win and fought not to lose, which a lot of fighters, when they're facing somebody as terrifying and as accomplished as Chris Cyborg, a lot of fighters go in there not to lose. Felicia Spencer was clearly coming to win, as was Cyborg, who had a very pivotal fight with her free agency status on the line, and looked sharp as ever. So I think both of them come out looking really, really good there, and it's the best kind of 145 pound fight that we've seen. It's the one that says, oh, actually, maybe there is something to this division. I feel like this could be the potential springboard, but it really will require mining a lot of that talent.
Yeah, it's a good point. Okay, one more. I lied. Corey Anderson, has he done enough?
Oh, boy.
Do you want to see that fight? What? You didn't like it?
You mean by going to a signing and heckling?
Yes.
And getting booed in his hometown? I don't know if that was it.
No.
As the kids say on the internet, that ain't it, Chief.
Wow.
I'm not buying that. Now,
whoa.
Do I think Corey Anderson is a very, very good fighter and could earn the title opportunity on the merits of his wins? That I actually buy. But did that help his case? I don't buy. I don't think that really had any impact at all. I think John Jones dismissed him the same way he dismissed Chai Lewis Parry when he showed up at a signing and overseas. I just don't think that is the way to get a fight with John Jones. He seems to not be too bothered by it. So Corey Anderson deserves a title shot. Do I think that was the thing that will push him there? Nope.
What about Corny Anderson?
I
have to say, pretty good line out of
John. Good line by John Jones. I do think Corey Anderson's Twitter trash talk game is better than his showing up to the signing trash talk game.
Well, that often happens.
I like Corey Anderson's Twitter persona. I think he's doing a better job there of getting under John's skin and trying to push him into a fight than showing up. I wasn't thrilled by that. But I do think Corey has a great case for the fight. I think Corey is a fantastic fighter. It seems like him and Johnny Walker are now,
well, isn't that funny, by the way? Isn't that funny? It's like, this happens, then Dana's asked about it at the press conference on Saturday, and he's like, no way, the guy's turned down 30 fights. And then all of a sudden, here comes Johnny Walker. It's like, oh, hey, Corey, you turned down 30 fights? Enjoy Johnny Walker at Madison Square Garden. Let's see you get by that one. It almost feels like that's his little punishment, if you will.
Yes, in a way, but I think it's just him reading the writing on the wall and that the John Jones fight is not going to happen, and that he's going to need to do it against an opponent that, people are excited about, and I think Johnny Walker is that opponent. I would not be surprised to see Corey Anderson pass that test, nor would I be surprised to see Johnny Walker do something spectacular. So I kind of like that fight as an eliminator fight.
Yeah, I wonder if they're waiting just for August 17th. That's the feeling.
Yeah.
They're just waiting to see what happens, or if they're going to go with Jan. Jan is pushing. He's trying, but I think they want to see. Win or lose, by the way. Like, I keep mentioning that, and people are like, well, are you just going to dismiss Stipe? I think they'll try to get DC to fight John, win or lose. It obviously helps.
DC
but I don't
losing
think
at heavyweight doesn't preclude him from doing anything
exactly
with John at 205. Win or lose, I think that's the fight to make. And you asked me on New Year's. What's the fight I want to see? You asked me New Year's 2019, very, very, you know, as soon as the clock struck, I want to see John Jones versus DC 3.
Yes, me too. People keep getting mad at me, but I'm like, what? How do you not want to see this fight? Especially at heavyweight. At heavyweight, it's really special. We'll see what happens. We'll have plenty of time to talk about that post UFC 241. For now, we are out of time. They are kicking us out here in Montreal. I'm in Montreal, by the way, New York, Rick. Did you know that?
I did know that. I'm sitting right next to you.
That's right.
Good call.
Nice of you to join me on the trip.
Yeah. So look, people don't know that we vacationed together, but we'll pull back the curtain a little bit here.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate the insight. It was a little depressing this week, but it had to be done.
I feel like we ended strong. We're good.
Yes. Thank you. All right. There he is, New York Rick. You know where to find him. Fun show today. Covered a lot of things. Talked to a lot of people. Brett Okamoto, San Jose, Chuck Mindenhall. So great to reunite. And, of course, New York Rick. So, like I said, UFC is back this Saturday afternoon. Saturday afternoon. Don't mess this up. Okay. Don't sit down at 7 p.m. on Saturday and be like, ooh, I can't wait for some UFC. And then the whole card will have happened. You'll feel really, really bad. You'll feel dumb. Saturday afternoon, some interesting fights on the prelims, which kick off at 12 p.m. Eastern. Hannah Goldie, formerly of Contender Series, going up against Miranda Granger, a champion from the Northeast, CFFC. What about the return of Mickey Gall? He's on the prelims. What about the return of Antonina Shevchenko? She's on the prelims as well. What about the return of Hot Sauce, Scotty Holtzman? Always fun to watch him. And like I said, Clay Guida, Jim Miller, two legends. Guida, 35-18, going up against Miller, 30-13. Jim Miller, most fights in UFC history. That's the co-main, of course. Miller, a very proud New Jersey resident, so it'll be fun to see him fighting at The Rock. They haven't been there in over 3 years, so it's going to be cool to see New Jersey hosting an event again. They've sort of been forgotten about because once New York opened up the doors, UFC started to go a hell of a lot more to Madison Square Garden, Brooklyn, etc. And the big one, Colby Covington, Robbie Lawler. Will Colby Covington walk out to Kurt Angle's music? Will he get a title shot? What will he do on the mic? Will Donald Trump Jr. be there? All those questions answered this Saturday on ESPN. I appreciate you listening. Appreciate you subscribing. Thank you very much for all the great feedback from last week and previous episodes. We appreciate it very much. Continue to download, rate, subscribe, all those things and more. Enjoy the fights this weekend. We will talk to you next week.